Okay, Haksamea again. And I have a message today called Taking Egypt Out of Israel. And, you know, when you think about the Exodus, right? The Exodus was the most amazing story in the history of man of Elohim coming in firsthand, getting involved with human beings, right? So you think about it, you can't think of anything else. You can think of miracles and things that happened in time, but you can't think of anything that was more firsthand involved of Elohim in the lives of men except the Exodus. So let's go to Exodus 3. Let's see a little bit about this. When Yahweh single-handedly took Israel out of Egypt. Exodus 3 and verse 7 says, And Yahweh said, Surely I have seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry from before their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows, and have come down to deliver them from the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good broad land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. And now, behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me, and I also have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. And now come, I will send you to Pharaoh, and you will bring my people out, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. Right? Then we can continue to Exodus 12. Verse 30. Exodus 12 and verse 30. And Pharaoh arose by night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not a one who had not died. And he sent a proclamation to Moses and Aaron by night. And it read, Arise, go out from the midst of my people, both you and the sons of Israel, and go serve Yahweh according to your word. Take both your flocks and your herds, as you said, and go and bless me also. And the Egyptians were strong on the people, to hasten to send them away from the land, for they said, All of us will be dead. And the people took up their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothing on their shoulders. And the sons of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they asked from the Egyptians articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing. And Yahweh gave favor to the people in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they granted their requests, and they plundered Egypt. And the sons of Israel traveled from Ramses to Sukkoth, the men being about 600,000 on foot, apart from little ones. Drop down to verse 41. And it happened at the end of 430 years, it happened on this day, all the armies of Yahweh went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night of celebration to Yahweh for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This night is a celebration for all the sons of Israel to their generations. That's verse 51. And it happened on this day, Yahweh brought out the sons of Israel from the land of Egypt by their armies, right? Wow. Here it is, they're slaves. They have no weapons. You know, they have no might. Egypt is the strongest country in the world. And by an absolute miracle, Yahweh goes and he takes them out of Egypt. Exodus 14, it even gets better. Exodus 14 and verse 5. And it was told to the king of Egypt that the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and the heart of his servants was turned as to the people. And they said, What is this we have done? For we have sent away Israel from serving us. And he prepared his chariots and he took his people with him. And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and officers over them. And Yahweh hardened Pharaoh, king of Egypt's heart. And he pursued the sons of Israel, and the sons of Israel were going out with a high hand. Drop down to verse 23. And the Egyptians pursued, and all the horses of Pharaoh came after them, his chariots, his horsemen, in the middle of the sea. And it happened in the morning watch. Yahweh looked on the camp of the Egyptians in the pillar of fire and cloud. And he confused the camp of the Egyptians. And he took off the wheels of their chariots and made them drive with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, I will flee from the face of Israel, for Yahweh is fighting for them against the Egyptians. And Yahweh said to Moses, Stretch out your hand over the sea, and let the waters return on the Egyptians, on their chariots, and on their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its usual flow at the turning of the morning, and the Egyptians were fleeing to meet it. And Yahweh shook off the Egyptians into the middle of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen together with all the army of Pharaoh, those going after them into the sea. And not even one was left among them. And the sons of Israel walked on dry ground in the middle of the sea, the waters being a wall for them from their right and from their left. And when you look that word up in the Hebrew, literally it's congealed. It was like ice, you know, the walls on both sides. And Yahweh saved Israel in that day from the land, from the hand of Egypt. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. And Israel saw the great hand with which Yahweh worked against Egypt. And the people feared Yahweh, and they believed in Yahweh and his servant Moses. And like I said, wow. I mean, it's just, you can't even imagine what it would be like to be there. You know, when you praise Yahweh, even though movies like the Ten Commandments aren't perfect, at least they can help us visualize to a degree of what was involved in all that and what happened, right? And what was the reason for it? What was the reason Yahweh was getting involved with these people? Let's go to Deuteronomy 10. Deuteronomy 10, starting in verse 12. And now, Israel, what has Yahweh your Elohim asked of you, except to fear Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in all his ways and to love him, and to serve Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul, to keep the commandments of Yahweh and his statutes which I am commanding you today for your good. Behold, the heavens and the heaven of the heavens, the earth and all that is in it, belong to Yahweh your Elohim. Verse 15. Only Yahweh has delighted in your fathers to love them and to choose their seed after them on you out of all the people as it is today. And you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart, and you shall not harden your neck anymore. Drop down to verse 20. You shall fear Yahweh your Elohim. You shall serve him, and you shall cleave to him, and you shall swear by his name. He shall be your praise, and he shall be your Elohim, who has done for you these great and fearful things which your eyes have seen. So the whole reason that Yahweh did this great miracle of taking Israel out of Egypt was because Yahweh was looking for a loving relationship with Israel as a father to a child. That was basically what it was in. But what happens less than 1 month after that? Go to Exodus 16. Exodus 16 and verse 1. And they pulled up stakes from Elam, and the congregation of the sons of Israel came into the wilderness of Zin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their going out from the land of Egypt. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to him, "Would it not that we have died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, and are sitting by the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction? For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill all the assembly with hunger." Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, I am will rain bread from the heavens to you, and the people shall go and gather the matter of a day in its day, so that I may test them whether they will walk in my Torah or not." So here it is, just 1 month after they witnessed all these miracles, including the parting of the Red Sea, and they're murmuring, rebelling, even falsely accusing Yahweh. You see, the problem was, Yahweh took Israel out of Egypt, but he didn't take Egypt out of Israel. I don't know if you noticed that when I said the message, taking Egypt out of Israel, wasn't a mistake. Because Yahweh took Israel out of Egypt, but he didn't take Egypt out of Israel. They were conditioned from being in Egypt to be like Egyptians in many ways. Just as many today are conditioned to be Babylonians because of the Babylonian society instead of Israelites. If we go to Exodus 1, 6 and 7. Exodus Exodus 1, verse 6 and 7 says, "And Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. And the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased very much and multiplied and became very strong, and the land was filled with them." So every Israelite that was in Egypt at that time was born in Egypt. Every one of them, right? This is 215 years, you know, after they originally went down there. So everyone was born, and it's the same way that I'm Italian, my family is from Italy, but my grandparents migrated to America, you know, and my grandmother was only 18 or 19 years old when she came to America, and when she was 92, she still only spoke Italian, you know, because she was an Italian, she came from Italy. But us, the kids, even her kids, my father and his brothers and sisters, they spoke to my grandparents in English, and my grandparents spoke to them in Italian. But they were Americans. And then their kids, us, we were totally American. I realized that when I first went to Italy. You know, they would call the American. They didn't look at me as an Italian. They looked at me as an American. And my culture was the same way all of us. Our culture is that we are under the Babylonian premise, right? The same way these Egyptians were all born in Egypt. So they weren't Israelites. They were by far, they were Egyptians. And we're going to see this. Yahweh took Israel out of Egypt, but he didn't take Egypt out of Israel. They were conditioned from being in Egypt to be like Egyptians. All these Israelites leaving were born in Egypt. In essence, they were Egyptians in culture, in style, and how they acted. They desired freedom from slavery, but not a change of heart from their Egyptian way. And wow, it's a great parallel today for believers, because it's the same thing that happens. You know, people like the idea of having sins forgiven or something like that, but they don't want to change. They don't want to have a change of heart. And like I said, like a person born in the USA, but their grandparents could be born in Germany, Italy, or anywhere else, they still have the culture of Babylon. Exodus 32, let's take a look and see more of this. Exodus 32. In verse 1. "And the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, and the people gathered to Aaron, and they said to him, 'Rise up, make for us gods who may go before our face. For this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what became of him.' And Aaron said to them, 'Break off the rings of gold which are on the ears of your wives and your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me.' And all the people broke off the rings of gold in their ears, and they brought to Aaron. And he took them from their hand and formed it with an engraving tool, and he made it casted calf. And they said, 'These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt.' And Aaron saw, and he built an altar to it, and Aaron called a feast and said, 'A feast to Yahweh tomorrow.' And they rose early in the morning, or early on the morrow, and they offered burnt offerings and brought near peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to make merry. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and said, 'Come, go down, for your people whom you've caused to come up from Egypt are corrupted. They have quickly turned off from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a casted calf and have bowed to it and have sacrificed to it. And they have said, "These are your gods, O Israel, brought you up from the land of Egypt." And Yahweh said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people." And believe it or not, I've given messages and read this scripture, and people laugh. They laugh, you know, because when you compare, you know, Western society to this, and it's like, it's no laughing matter whatsoever, you know, because they never took Egypt out of themselves. Like I said, Yahweh may have taken them out of Egypt, but they never took Egypt out of themselves. They were prideful, lustful, and unwilling to change. And the interesting part is, they made the golden calf, but they didn't call the golden calf Hathor, one of their false deities. They called the golden calf Yahweh. So that these calves are still around today, you know, down in the Sinai Peninsula, they're carved into the stone. And like I said, it wasn't one. These are your GODs, right? More than one. They're corrupt all over the place. But that was the point of it. They didn't know anything different. So they were carving the same pagan cows But instead of calling the cow whatever, Isis or whatever, now they're calling it Yahweh. Yahweh took them out of Egypt, but he never took Egypt out of Israel. How many get baptized but never really repent? And also never really leave their worldly idols behind. Facebook, worldly movies, social media, bad internet surfing, worldly education and jobs. Many people, you know, they want to hold on to that. Social media with the world, never wanting to leave Babylon or Egypt, quote unquote, the old life behind. So it's the same that we're seeing from Scripture. And it says all these things were examples for us today. And wow, it's an example for us because we're living it. You know, when you look in the end time, the parable of, you know, the wheat and the tares and all of them, you know, at best it's 50-50, but in the end time it's more like 90-10. It's more like a tithe. Come out and really do it. And most of the people still stay in that old lifestyle. Matthew 6 and verse 19 says, "Do not treasure up for you treasures on the earth, where moth and rust cause to corrupt, and where thieves dig through and steal. For where," verse 21, "for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And it's so true. You know, a lot of times, as believers, we're willing to give to a point of where our treasure is. But then we're not willing to go beyond that. And that's when Yeshua says, unless you're willing to forsake everything, you cannot be my disciples. And he doesn't mean to literally just become a believer and donate everything you have. Because that's not a kingdom principle. You know what that would mean? That would mean you're dependent on somebody, and now somebody else has to take care of you. You have no money to pay your rent. You have no money to pay your food. What he means is, unless you're not willing to forsake everything, it means that we use but we don't possess. Whatever is put in our hand, we're willing to use it for the kingdom. We're not possessing. Nothing is our own. If somebody needs it more than us, we're willing to give it. Where our treasure is, there your heart is also. Is it in the world or is it in the kingdom of Yahweh? It can't be both. Philippians 3 and verse 15. Philippians 3 and verse 15. It says, "Then as many as are perfect, think about these things. And if you think anything differently, Elohim will also reveal this to you. Yet as to where we have arrived, walk by the same rule, being of the same mind. Be fellow imitators of me, brothers, and consider those walking this way, even as you have us for in a pattern. For many walk as enemies to the torture stake of Messiah, of whom I often told you, now even weeping I say, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and who glory in their shame, the one thinking on earthly things. But our citizenship is in heaven, from where we also wait a Savior, the Master Yeshua Messiah, who will transform our body of humiliation to the likeness of his glorious body, according to his mighty power, to be able to subject all things under him," right? So when you're living to the flesh, like I said before, we should be looking at our flesh as a handicap, and we should be dying to the flesh every day, not supporting it and living to it, because it's a body of humiliation. And we should be looking forward to what? To that glorified body that we're going to get at the resurrection. And that's the point. Where your heart is, there your treasure is also. And if we really believe that we are ambassadors for the kingdom and our citizenship is in heaven, you're not going to put all your assets into just things for your flesh. You're going to put them into things that are eternal, free that way. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Hebrews 3 and verse 7, which is such a great chapter on why Israel failed, right? Because they never took Egypt out of themselves. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. "Because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation in the wilderness." We were just reading about it. "There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works for 40 years. Because of this, I was angry with that generation and said, They always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. And I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Right? They won't be in the kingdom. Beware therefore, my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe. Right? Where your heart is, there your treasure is also. And you will be cut off from the living Elohim. But search your hearts each day until the day which is called the day, right? The day of judgment. That not any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah if truly from the beginning to the very end we hold steadfast to this true covenant. As in the saying, today if you hear even the echoes of his voice, do not harden your hearts to anger, right? So even the echo, not even the voice itself, but the echo of it. Who are those who heard and provoked him? Was it not those who came out of Egypt through Moses? Although not all of them, but most of them. But with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with the one sinning whose bones lay in the wilderness? And I've been there. I've been to some of the mass graves in the wilderness of sin and seen it. And to whom did he swear they would not enter his rest except those not obeying? So we see they were not able to enter in because of unbelief. So again, I always say that you got to get to the wilderness before the kingdom. But what good is it if you get to the wilderness and you never get out of the wilderness? You know, you don't want to die in the wilderness. That's not the goal. Therefore, let us fear, lest while the promise of entering into his rest remains, lest some among you find they are falling short from entering. Right? Some of us may be there now. For indeed, we have had the good news preached to us, even as they also. Isn't that an interesting scripture? You know, they literally had the good news preached to them. But the word did not profit those hearing. Why? Not having been mixed with faith in the ones who heard. So they didn't believe. Just like Adam and Eve, like we said in Genesis. They simply didn't believe Yahweh. Because they never came out of Egypt. They may have physically come out of the land, but they never took Egypt out of their hearts. Their heart was in Egypt, you know, the commercial Babylon of that day. They lacked faith in Yahweh because they lusted for the things of the world that are contrary to the kingdom of Yahweh. And there was another major reason why this happened. And it's from Exodus 12, 37 and 38. Exodus 12, 37 and 38. And the sons of Israel traveled from Ramses to Succoth, the men being about 600,000 on foot, apart from little ones. And also a mixed multitude went up with them, in flocks and herds and very many livestock. A mixed multitude went up among them. They were affected by the mixed multitude because you're going to become like the people you're with. And I think a lot of brethren, they just don't understand that. They think they're strong enough. They think that they won't be affected by it. And yet we look at Israel's example, and even today, you know, I can't tell you how many people, some even elders, that was strong for a while, and because of the mixed multitude, they're no longer with us. So you can't play fire with your salvation. And the mixed multitude has no place in the wilderness. You know, Yahweh says he'll separate them. But you got to separate the ones in your life, because the mixed multitude is what affected these people. 1 Corinthians 15:33, right? What does it say? Do not be led astray. Bad companionships ruin good habits. And it's amazing how quick that can happen. I've been amazed myself, because sometimes I've let my guard down, right? Because maybe there's one bad apple. There's one mixed multitude, and I think, oh no, this congregation, I know these people for years. They're too strong. This person can never fall for it. And before you know it, a third of the congregation is in rebellion because of the one from the mixed multitude. The mixed multitude doesn't prepare because they don't believe. The mixed multitude doesn't prepare because they don't believe. But they will leave with you when the time comes. They'll run for their life. Why are they? Because they're reactive people. So they're not going to prepare nothing. They're going to try to talk you out of everything Yahweh wants you to do. But then when the time comes, they'll be the first ones there trying to run and take whatever you prepared out of fear, without faith in Yahweh. Then at the first sign of trouble, they will be the first ones complaining, murmuring, even lying against Yahweh and causing division in the camp. And we see it. We see it here. Let's go to Numbers 11. We see the examples in Scripture, and we see it today. I can give you personal examples where I've seen it. The same pattern that works. So like I said, the mixed multitude, they don't prepare because they don't believe, but they will leave with you out of fear, without faith in Yahweh. Then at the first sign of trouble, they'll complain, they'll murmur, they'll even lie against Yahweh and cause division in the camp. And of course, come against Yahweh's leadership. And I always think when I've dealt with this with myself, I thought, wow, well, if they did it to Moses, who am I? You know, you can't think, oh, it never happened to me. If it happened to Moses, of course it could happen to me. Numbers 11, 1 through 6. And the people were evil as those complaining in the ears of Yahweh. They were evil. So they're not brothers. The Bible tells us in 1 John, they're tares among wheat, and they're not with you because they were never part of you. They were simply plants that were there. But like it says here, the people were evil as those complaining in the ears of Yahweh. And Yahweh heard and his anger glowed, and the fire of Yahweh burned among them and devoured in the extreme edge of the camp. Isn't that interesting? Where do the goats go? The sheep all stay together in the middle. The goats are always on the extreme edge. They want to see how far they can go, you know, without getting in trouble. So here they are here, you know. The mixed multitude, they're on the extreme edge of the camp. And the people cried to Moses, and Moses prayed to Yahweh, and the fire was quenched. And he called the name of that place Taberah, because the fire of Yahweh burned among them. And the mixed multitude among them lusted with a great lust. And the sons of Israel also turned back and wept and said, who shall cause us to eat flesh? We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt for nothing. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. And now our soul withers. There's nothing except this manna before our eyes. I think, wow, they must have ripped a couple of chapters out of my Bible. Because I remember these people that they're slaves. I remember them being beaten. I remember them crying out to Yahweh. And all of a sudden now, when they're delivered, that's a whole different story, right? Reactive. They're reactive people. And why? Because of the mixed multitude that's telling them, remember we had this, remember we had that? And they're cursing Yahweh and cursing Yahweh's leadership. Just as faith is contagious, so is doubt. Just as faith is contagious, so is doubt. And that's why Satan tries just to put one doubt there that's all he needs. Just like cancer, you only need one cell and it'll multiply on its own. And if Satan can put a little bit of doubt one place, it'll run like wildfire. Just as faith is contagious, so is doubt. Murmuring spirit brings out the worst of our human nature. The mixed multitude reminded them daily of what they left behind in Satan's society, so they wouldn't look to the promised land. And I'm sure every one of you can think in your life, you know, whether it's your boss at work, you know, that's asking, why did you give that up? Could be family members, could be friends, continuously. Do you know what you gave up in Babylon? Do you know this? Do you know that? Continuously trying to get you to doubt your faith in Yahweh. But I always remember the people that are saying that, they don't have 1% faith, they have 0% faith. So why on earth would I listen to the mixed multitude? Why would I hear one word of the mixed multitude? I want to hear the voice of Yahweh. And as long as I hear his voice, I don't need to worry about the mixed multitude. Numbers 14, a couple pages over, we see another example of this. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept during the night. And all the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And all the congregation said to him, oh, that we had died in the land of Egypt, or in this wilderness. Oh, that we had died. And why is Yahweh bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants have become a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt? Is it not good for us to return to Egypt? And shame on anybody that comes to the truth that Yahweh opens your eyes. He takes you from darkness to life. And you want to go back to Babylon? Wow. It's not even a good place. Physical Babylon and spiritual Babylon. The whole world today is a mess. It's a real mess. And Yahweh delivers us from that. He brings us to the wilderness. He gives us eyes to see. He feeds us everything we need. And this is what they're saying. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt, Babylon, you know, Europe, U.S., South America, wherever, wherever it is. Return to anywhere where he's taking you from. And they said to each his brother, let us give a leader and return to Egypt. Wow. Let us give a leader and return to Egypt. And I say this, you know, leaving, we are commanded as a people to leave the commercial Babylon, the system of commercial Babylon, every single one of us. And the ones who come from United States of Babylon, there's seven commands there that we have to leave the land of Babylon. And Yahweh will take us out. And that's why I've preached for 25 years. He'll take you out when he gets you out. But the worst sin that I believe is either close or maybe even the unpardonable sin is when Yahweh makes that way, when he cuts that tithe, when he parts the Red Sea, and you're on the other side, and you want to go back to Babylon. And some actually do. Because the Israelites were there for 215 years, so they weren't sinning while they were in Egypt, because Yahweh didn't deliver them yet. But once he delivered them, once he parted the sea, once they were out on the other side, and they saw his glory on Mount Sinai, to sit here and say, we want to go back to Egypt? Wow. I believe it's the unpardonable sin. Because what you're doing is you're saying, Yahweh, your way? Eh. What's this manna? Come on. I got real stuff back there in Babylon. I got the real stuff. Scary, but it happens with a lot of people. In verse 5, and Moses and Aaron fell on their face before the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. Where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. And Yehoshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, and those who spied out the land, they tore their garments. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land into which we passed, to spy out, it's an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh has delighted in us, then he will bring us into the land and will give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh. And you, do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their defense is turned away from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not be afraid of them. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. You're starting to wonder why only two went to the promised land? Only two went into the promised land out of 2 million. And the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tent of meeting and all the sons of Israel. And Yahweh said to Moses, until when will this people despise me? And until when will they continue not to believe in me for all the signs I have done in their midst? What more can he do? You know, he did. He already turned the water to blood and the flies and the lice and the darkness, the killing of the firstborn and the parting of the Red Sea, hitting the rock, the water coming. What more can he do? And that's why I say, miracles don't build your faith. Miracles are an extension of your faith. Because when a miracle happens, everybody believes that second of the miracle. But all of a sudden the next day, did it really happen? Well, yeah, you know, this guy had this ailment and he laid his hands on him, but he might have got better anyway, you know. Oh, yeah. We were having drought for 2 years and he prayed and it rained that second. But it might have rained anyway. So for people that are faithless, a miracle isn't going to build your faith. A miracle is an extension of your faith. Because if you have faith, believe me, miracles will happen. Because that's what it comes from. It comes from your belief. But Yahweh's not here to do parlor tricks in front of his people to make them believe. And we see here, it just doesn't work. Because the minute that the miracle is over, people are going right back to the same old thing. Because they lack faith. So it's just, how long? Until when will they continue not to believe in me for all the signs I have done in their midst? A divided heart is always looking back. A divided heart is always looking back. And what is the first commandment? You shall love Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. We're to love him more than anything. But a divided heart will always look back because you're breaking the first commandment. It means you're not loving Yahweh with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. There's something else in the physical realm that you're loving just as much or maybe even more. And a lot of times it's yourself. You know, you're loving yourself. You're looking for pleasures. You're looking for safety. You're looking for fear. You're looking for all these things. But a divided heart will always look back. We need to be coming out of the world system and not looking back to Egypt. No different than, like I said, being taken out of Babylon to go back to the same system that they came out of. We need to be coming out of the world, not getting back into it. How many times do we still doubt Yahweh after all the miracles he's done in our life? So we can't read this and say, wow, how on earth did those people not believe? When in our life he's done just as many miracles, maybe in different ways, right? It's the same kind of miracle where you don't have the money for the rent and all of a sudden it shows up. Or, you know, something could have happened where somebody was sick right before you and you didn't get it. These are all miracles. If you have eyes to see, Yahweh is doing a miracle in your life every day. Just the fact that you wake up and you can breathe is a miracle. Every day you're alive, it's a miracle. And like my wife always says, if you, you know, with money, because we find the money in the streets. And a lot of people would laugh at us because we're picking up a penny, you know, because it's like, oh, look at that peasant, he's getting a penny. And she'd always say, if you don't honor the little ones, you won't get the big ones. And it's true. You know, he who is faithful in little will be faithful in much. You've got to honor the little ones to get the big ones. And how many times do we still doubt Yahweh after all he's done for us? 2 Peter 2 and verse 19. 2 Peter 2 and verse 19. Because the mixed multitude gets in people's ears, and then people start doubting, and then they lie to themselves, and then they start making excuses. But at the end of the day, while promising to them freedom, though themselves being slaves of corruption, for a man is overcome by whatever it is that enslaves him. A man is overcome by whatever it is that enslaves him. Either you overcome it, or it's going to overcome you. For when you have escaped the pollutions of the world, by the knowledge of our Master and Redeemer, Yeshua Messiah, you become again entangled in the very same thing that you, the very same things, and are overcome by them. Their latter end is worse with them than the beginning. For it was better not to have known the way of righteousness than having recognized it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But the word of the proverb has happened: the dog turns to his own vomit, also the sow that was washed to wallowing in the mud. And it's the parable of the sower in the field, right? You know, the cares of the world, or some of the seed that comes on the wayside, and the people are really excited, but then trouble comes, and what do? They turn back. So it's only the one that's on the good ground, the seed, that are going to make it. And this is the test of the end time. Is your heart in Satan's system of Babylon or the kingdom of Yahweh? Some never left Babylon in their heart, and like a dog to the vomit, they turn back at their calling and go back. And that's why I say, if you've been delivered from there, and you're out, because it's very hard. I know people that want to get out of there now, and they can't. There's a lot of complications, you know. I mean, if you have children, that the marriage may be separated, you can't leave. Because they'll come for you, and don't think they won't. Don't think that what do the police call it? The international, you know, police force, because it's happened right here in Jordan. With a person fled many years ago, came to Jordan with their two children. They reported to the authorities, and they came here and took the person away and put him in prison, took the kids away. So it's a small world today, you know. So there's people that would love to leave that can't leave for different reasons. But if Yahweh parted the Red Sea and you're out and you're free, there's 191 other countries you can go in. Why would you go back to Babylon? Why on earth would you go back to Babylon? That would be the last place on earth I'd go to. There's a lot of places I would go to, but that would be the last place that I would go to if Yahweh freed me. But again, it's the mixed multitude. It's the mixed multitude tickling the ear, scratching the ear. Nehemiah 13, because, you know, they have the same problem. When Israel went back to the land, right after the Babylonian captivity, and look what happened here. They were intermarrying, having a mixed multitude, Nehemiah 13, verse 1. And on that day, we read in the book of Moses, in the ears of the people, and it was found written in that the Amorite and the Moabite should not come into the congregation of the Elohim forever, because they did not meet the sons of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam against them to curse them. But our Elohim turned the curse to a blessing. And it happened when they heard the Torah, they separated all the mixed multitude from Israel. When they heard the Torah, they separated all the mixed multitude. And, you know, this is the time we're in right now. The dividing line is there. We know many things are happening. And there's people that have no faith that we know are already going to do the wrong thing, take the mark, all the other things. And you can't have a mixed multitude in the wilderness. We've already learned that lesson, you know. I mean, can we do better than the word of Yahweh, what he tells us? We think it's going to be better? The same result is going to happen. 1 John 2:15 through 18, we read this a lot, but we really got to take it to heart. Do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in its lust. But the one doing the will of Yahweh abides forever. Little children, it is the last hour. So this is in context of us. It is the last hour. And as you heard that the anti-Messiah is coming, even now many anti-Messiahs have risen up, from which you know that it is the last hour. And who is an anti-Messiah? Anybody that's against Messiah, the word of Yahweh, right? The mixed multitude, they're all anti-Messiah. Because all they're trying to do is bring doubt, division, fear. But they can't do it if you don't listen. And like I said, if you look at the Amish, they have no problem with vaccine passports. If you're out of the system completely, you have no problem. You only have a problem, and your problems, how they'll get either greater or less in the days coming, will be completely, directly intertwined with how much you're involved in the system. The more you're out of the system, the less your problems will be. The more you're intertwined in the system, the more your problems will be. If you're out of it completely, your problems become very minimal, at least temporarily. Philippians 3, 13 through 15. He says, brothers, I do not count myself to have reached the goal, but one thing I do, forgetting the things behind and stretching forward to those things before. I press toward the goal to receive the prize of victory, the highest calling of Yahweh Messiah Yeshua. Then as many as are perfect, think about these things. And if you think anything differently, Yahweh will reveal to you. So this is the time we have to look forward. This is the time, if you have problems or things in your life, you've got to get over them. You've got to move ahead. And particularly, we have to put the things of Egypt or the things of Babylon behind. These are the things we left, and we have to put them behind. We can't be lusting for them in our heart. When I first left Babylon, going all the way back to 1999, one of the ladies who came with us, I think I mentioned this in a sermon, she brought like 10 or 12 years of perms with her. You know, just wanted to buckle down just in case. Can you imagine? You know, you can bring how many suitcases or whatever. You're limited. You want to make sure you have your water filter. You want to make sure, you know, you have your, but the most important things. Here you open up the suitcase. You have 12 years of perms. You know, it's like, come on. But where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. Ephesians 4 and verse 17. Ephesians 4 and verse 17. He says, therefore I say this in testifying the Master, that you no longer walk, even as also the rest of the nations walk, in the vanity of their mind, having been darkened by their intellect, being alienated from the life of Elohim because they have no knowledge, which is because of the hardness of their heart, who having cast off all feeling, surrendered themselves up to lust and to the practice of all uncleanness with a desire for more and more. But that is not what you have been taught in Messiah. If indeed you heard him and were taught him, as the truth is in Yeshua, lay aside all former practices and put off the old man, having been degenerated with deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and to put on the new man who is created by Elohim in righteousness and true holiness. So this is what we're doing. This is what our calling is about. We must get Egypt out of our hearts, our minds, looking ahead to the kingdom, and growing in holiness, growing in the mind of Messiah, growing in purity, growing in holiness. 1 Corinthians 10. So now this is the chapter that tells all the mistakes that the Israelites made in the wilderness and says it's for our example. So now let's take a look at it in context of what we've been going over today. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And all were baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock following, and that rock was Messiah. Yet Elohim was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the deserted place. But these things became examples for us, that we may not be lusting after evil, even as those indeed lusted. Neither be idolaters, even as some of them, as it has been written, the people sat down to eat and rose up to play. Nor should we commit fornication, as some of them fornicated, and 23,000 died in one day. Neither let us tempt the Messiah, as some of them tempted him, and were destroyed by serpents. And every time we don't believe Yahweh, every time we question one of his commands, we're tempting him. You know, we're tempting him when we do that. Neither should you murmur, as some of them murmured, right? Complaining and this and that, and they perish by the hand of the destroyer. In the Aramaic, it actually says Satan. And all these things happen to those as examples. And it was written for our warning on whom the ends of the earth have come. So this is written for us today. So that he that thinks he stand, let him be careful that he not fall, right? We don't want to get puffed up. We don't want to think it can't happen to us. We want to be ready. We want to be working. We want to be changing. We want to be humble. No temptation is taking you except what is human. But Elohim is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested above what you are able. But with the trial, he will also make the way out so that you may be able to bear it. And this is a really, really important scripture. It's a really important scripture because, number one, we could take solace that whatever we're going through, Yahweh would never give us something that's more than we could bear. So at times you feel that way. You feel, I know, Yahweh, you said you'll never give me more than I can bear, but wow, you came pretty close. So he'll never give us more than what we can bear. But the other thing is, with every trial, he makes a way out. And we have to look for that way. You've got to pray for that way. You've got to look for that way. That there'll never be a trial. Sometimes you're so focused on the trial that you're missing the way out. And there's always a way out, as Word says it. With every trial, there's always a way out. On account of this, keep away from idolatry, my beloved. And it's idolatry of anything above the first commandment. To love Yahweh with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And if our mind is divided, it's idolatry. So on account of this, keep away from idolatry, my beloved. I speak as to prudent ones. You judge what I say. So Israel failed because they came out of Egypt, but they didn't take Egypt out of their hearts and out of their culture. Isaiah 11, because there's going to be another Exodus. And we have to learn from the first one if we're going to make it across that Red Sea. Isaiah 11 and verse 9. They shall not do evil nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the water covers the sea. And it shall be in that day the root of Jesse stands as a banner of his people. Nations shall seek to him, and his resting place will be glorious. And it shall be in that day, Yahweh shall again set his hand the second time to recover the remnant of his people that remains from Assyria, from Egypt, from Patros, from Ethiopia, from Elam, from Shinar, and from Hamath, and from the coast of the sea. If we drop down, I'll read verse 12, and then we'll drop down to verse 15. And he shall lift up a banner for the nations, and shall gather the outcasts of Israel, and gather those dispersed from Judah, from the four winds of the earth. verse 15, and Yahweh will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt, and with his scorching wind, he will wave his hand over the river just like he did the first time. And he will strike it into seven torrents and make one tread it with shoes. And there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, those left from Assyria, as it was to Israel in the day when he came up out of the land of Egypt. Right? So what is this highway that he's talking about? Go to Isaiah 35 and verse 8. Isaiah 35 and verse 8. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it will be called the way of holiness. The unclean will not pass over it. And it is for them the one going in the way. Yea, fools shall not go astray. No lion will be there, and no violent beast will go up on it. It shall not be found there, but redeemed ones will walk there. And the ransom of Yahweh will return and enter Zion with singing and everlasting joy on their hearts. Gladness and joy will reach them, and sorrow and sighing shall flee. So this is the way, right? So here it is. I said you can't get to the kingdom of Yahweh without coming to the wilderness. So you have to go through the spiritual wilderness before the physical wilderness, and the physical wilderness before the kingdom of Yahweh. But I forgot to mention, there's one more road at the end of the physical wilderness, and that's the highway of holiness. So that's the road out of the wilderness. The wilderness is a real big place, and like we said, the bride goes into the wilderness with spot and blemish, and during that time she's got to get out every spot and blemish. But at the end of that big, horrible, dangerous wilderness that we're going to go through, we're going to see that last highway, that last bridge to the kingdom is called the highway of holiness. And that's the reason why. You have to get out every spot and wrinkle. And only those who love, like I said, what was the whole reason Yahweh took Israel out of Egypt? Only because he loved them. Only because he wanted to be Elohim to them. Only because he wanted to care for them and bless them. And he wanted them to be his children. But they didn't want to do it. Because Yahweh was able to take Israel out of Egypt, but he wasn't able to take Egypt out of Israel. Because we all have free will. It's got to be our choice. We have to choose to do this. We have to, you know, he wants to see if he forces us to do it, what good would it be to him? That's no feat if he just makes us and forces us to follow him. But yet if he makes us like him with free will and he gives us the choice and then we spend our time and we make every decision toward him and love for him, and we get out all wickedness of our life and we go on that highway of holiness, then he could know for sure that we'll do this forever. So we have to live on the highway of holiness. It's the only road to the kingdom. And the last scripture, Hebrews 11:6. But without faith it is impossible to please Yahweh, for it is right that the one drawing near to Yahweh should believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. So we read this many times, but now we're living in the time where it's not theory anymore, it's reality. Only faith will get you into that kingdom. We just read it a little bit ago in Hebrews 3. The ones who didn't have faith, why didn't they enter? Because they didn't believe. And now we're living in a time where now this is where the rubber's hitting the road. This is where if your faith will get you obedient through the kingdom, through that highway of holiness, or the lack of faith will get you nowhere. It'll get you out of it. But there's going to be something now. It's not just going to be an analogy, but now it's going to be reality. Now it's going to be like, you know what? If you really believe what Yahweh's saying, you might have to quit your job. Or not quit your job, they'll quit you. You might not be able to go to the hospital when you're sick. Oh, by the way, you might not even be able to get food and water from the supermarket. How much do you believe? And what was the biggest thing that Israel complained about in the wilderness? Water. They were the biggest problems, and they had reason to. You know? Go 3 days in this wilderness out here without water and see if you'll also be thinking, boy, you know? But we have a reason. I say there was a lot of reasons, 100 reasons that Israel may have had to complain in the wilderness when you read this, but there was one big reason not to. Because Yahweh was with them. He was only testing them. You really think he would let them drown? Well, not drown, thirst. You really think he would have let them thirst to death? Of course not. Of course not, but he had to test them. And here we are, all these things that are said now are focused toward us, all these examples, we're living it, and now we have to overcome where they failed. But it's not just going to happen. You're going to have to make those hard decisions. And like I said, you can't worry about consequences that you can't control, but you need to worry about decisions that you can control. That's what you have. As a child of Yahweh, as a human being, you have free choice. And you can make those decisions in your life. And don't worry, don't have fear about the consequences. That hasn't, you know, that's Yahweh's department, what happens from there. But he's going to see not the consequence, he's going to see our decision. He's going to see, did we put him first? Did we stay fast? Did we believe? Did we take Egypt out of our heart? So we have to put on the mind of Messiah, humble ourselves, come out of Satan's end time commercial Babylon, believe in the promises of Yahweh with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. The kingdom is a mentality as much as a reality. We must take Egypt, Babylon, out of our minds and hearts and culture. The wilderness is for this. We must grasp this reality every single day of our life. And praise Yahweh that the first time he took Israel out of Egypt, but this time he'll take Egypt out of Israel. Yahweh bless. Hasanah.